Off the ball.
Rugby.
I think Munster are in a bad state. I think Munster have been in a badly run organisation for a while. And it pains me to say this, I don't like saying it. I love Munster. I mean, I cut my teeth as rugby core the Irish Times in the noughties.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Performance so far of the World Cup, maybe not.
The bad.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber.
Off the balls. Performance rankings.
It's going to be a lot of jet lag this week, though. At least it wasn't a playoff. The playoff ultimately ended up taking about an hour last year.
Yeah.
So 12 o'clock finish is just about acceptable.
Yeah, I think so.
As far you as guys who are used to the 5 a.m. start.
Yeah. I did. It's the first time I've done it, but I stayed up for the whole coverage, essentially, the interviews, the jacket, everything. But now I don't remember any of it because I was so tired. Except for the, we were talking about it with Matthew pre-show, the weird AI looking interview to do in the cabin after. So strange. Such a weird dynamic.
The Jim Nance show.
Yeah, the green jackets really dominate the end of it. Wouldn't you think, like, right, this is a cool thing. It's only happened four times in history where someone's retained the Masters. So instead of the amazing tradition, in fairness, of, you know, the previous winner putting the jacket on somebody, why not, like, use that and say, right, we have a backup where, like, the last person to go, okay, Tiger's not here, but Nick Faldo could put it on him or whatever, you know what I mean?
That it's like, good, it?
Just something else instead of some random Augusta type.
Except then that's his time to shine, baby.
I know.
This is my moment.
He gets to do it four times in history.
Let's go live this morning to Hollywood Golf Club. Sarah Madden, News Talk reporter, is with us. Sarah, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. How are you getting on?
Well, we were very excited. You were on camera last night. It's the final moment.
So I'm told. To be honest, I think that might have been a little bit of a mistake. There was a cameraman pushing me out of the way, so I assume I was actually in the way of his shot. But look, a win is a win.
Great advertising, though, Sarah. We just got News Talk just passing across the screen at like the most important moment of the entire Masters.
Yeah. No, to be honest, it was planned. It was planned for sure.
We were all incredibly tense at home. That crowd looked calm early and then deflated and then slowly bubbling back up. What was that actually like?
It was exactly like that, yeah. I came in and things looked like they were going south. I was in at about the seventh hole and, you know, people had their heads in their hands. They were looking at the TV through their fingers. But I think as soon as we got past the first nine and into the second nine, things really started to pick up and you could feel it in the room. Things started to buzz and, you know, people were recording each other and it was as though the thing had already been won by the time we got to about the 16th hole, you know, and then finally when he took it home, it was just electric. You know, there was like elation. There was quite a bit of emotion as well in the room. I suppose you can understand that. A lot of these people know Rory since he was wee, as they would say up here. But, you know, there was chanting, there was singing. It was a brilliant place to be. I hope you're not too jealous.
And so is it like, is there a rollover crowd who were still there from last night, this morning? What actually, are they a bit more peaceful than that?
Well, do you know what? It's funny. Now, if rumours are to be true, Rory actually put his card behind the bar last night. So I have no doubt there's a couple of stragglers still hanging around at the bar. But, you know, what was really interesting was when I talked to people about what, you know, what happens next. Are they planning a big homecoming? And they said they didn't do a huge amount last year, but they're planning to do some stuff this week. But people started talking about how they need a bank holiday here in Hollywood. They were saying things like, there was a big crowd of boys actually from his alma mater there, from O'Sullivan's, and they were all wearing their green blazers, which is their uniform. But of course, a good omen as well for what was to come last night.
I didn't know that.
So there's great celebration here.
Sorry, I did not know that. Was that always he went to school where the uniform was actually a green blazer? I did not know that.
Unless it's changed since he was there. Well, but all the lads were there in their green blazers. And I was asking them, are you hoping to swap it for a Masters yourself? And they were saying that they had expected the green blazer to actually make its way back to Hollywood Golf Club last year. Because I don't know if you've been there, but I hesitate to call it a shrine, but there is an exhibit for Rory McIlroy there, and it contains like a lot of his trophies and memorabilia. And in fact, they actually do quite a good tourist trade there. People come, they walk down the avenue to Hollywood Golf Club just to see where Rory played, and I suppose the course that he's probably played most in his life, and that's what they're really proud of in Hollywood. So yeah, fingers crossed the Blazer will be coming in. There'll be a lot of people who want to try it on.
Rory kind of put out a stress figure in the last few holes, even though it looked like he kind of had it won towards the end. Was that the kind of feeling in the room as well, Sarah?
Yeah, there was, I think it was the 18th hole. Everyone was, you know, kind of had chilled out by that point. There was already shots going around the room for people who wanted to celebrate a little bit early. And then, yeah, that 18th hole, I think people, there was a little more. What's interesting is the people in this club know him so well. You know, for example, if he, you know, takes a shot or drives and he drops his shoulder, maybe you guys know this as well, but there was like a widespread in the room, you know, sucking through the teeth, because they know for Rory that means that he's disappointed. So there was a little bit of that going on in the room, but I think by that stage people had settled in enough, and maybe they'd had enough of the free drink that they were very happy to let Rory take over and find his way finally to the green coat.
Sarah, good stuff. We'll let you go. Thanks a million for checking in with us.
Thank you.
Enjoy the Hollywood celebrations.
I will.
Once the news gets out that Rory's free wire whenever he's in contention.
Yeah.
Wow. Suddenly the business will be booming in Hollywood Golf Club. Members only, I wonder.
I wonder what the feeling is amongst the kind of, you know, I suppose us all as, you know, Irish golf fans, but certainly people like in his home golf club this year versus last year, because it's such a massive moment for Rory in terms of his place on the Pantheon. And, you know, there's almost an element of like anyone can win it, but to do this is a different type of history. And there's, I'd imagine there's a kind of a, you never have that joy again of the first time. You never have that sort of relief and that visceral feeling. But you imagine there might be even something a little bit kind of a deeper in your sort of pride. And, you know, this one might bring on even the kind of a little bit of sort of a, that sort of delayed tear, I would imagine. More so, because you realise kind of the achievement of what he's done. Mm. Like just in terms of the Pantheon conversation, like, it's a massive leap.
Oh, yeah.
He has gone from Grand Slam is an amazing achievement, and that was there as something that none of his peers have. But it's five majors over the course of a very, very long prime. Faldo talked about it this a good bit last night. Very few, if any, even including Jack Nicklaus, have had a length of a career at the top that Rory have had. Five majors is a kind of an underachievement. You suddenly put that to six, which includes back-to-back Masters, which is the most coveted of them.
And the Grand Slam.
And the Grand Slam, which is what he got last year. And then you also put him up there with Faldo now with six Europeans, or with six majors as the top European of all time. And you have to say, because of the spread and his wins outside of the majors, McIlroy's far and above where Faldo ever was, so he's now kind of undisputed the best European golfer of all time. And it's funny how one tournament can just make that massive leap. Like, you know,
well, I think everyone was aware that he was capable of winning one, but it's going back to back is a bit different, and especially the type of golfer he's been. I know it's kind of the monkey off the back thing where the floodgates may now open, but you still have to go and do it. You still have to, you know, go through four rounds and go through the ups and downs. And
it's outrageous to come back from the situation. I mean, he must have been crushed on Saturday evening. Like, absolutely crushed.
It's insane, yeah.
And then crushed again to go double bogey, par, bogey in three holes early on. And then that's the bit, I think, that everybody's like, whoa.
But crushed is a good word, because he looked broken. He looked broken on the... That's why I was confused about the double bogey in the sixth, because I knew it was the seventh where he bounced back immediately. So that was the bogey on six that looked like he was still reverberating from what happened on the fourth hole at that stage. And it looked like there's no way back here. Like, he's just not in the right frame of mind even to physically hit the shots he needs to hit. And he just whacks one down the fairway at seven. And that's a birdie chance all day. And weirdly, the thing about seven was it had this kind of like play to the back of the green and it feeds down to the hole.
Yeah.
McIlroy had this kind of like incredible determined shot where he pitched it like it was actually the best shot that's been hit in there all day, but it wasn't as close because he pitched it like exactly where you would want it if there wasn't a big bank at the back, and he spun it and it was he made the putt. It was great, but it was actually, if you think about it now, you think like that was such a shot of determination. It's like, I am getting this back.
Yeah,
you know, I'm getting the, and then his he obviously hits the green in two on the par five on the eighth then as well, and you're like, God, he's like, he's genuinely turned this on here out of nowhere. And it's, where's it come from? He's hit two fairways in a row. He's hit two brilliant iron shots in a row.
The putt on 16 as well is like one of the Masters moments where I think it was still up for grabs at that point. You know, if he had dropped a shot there, there was definitely every chance that he was going to drop a shot on 18 again.
Having like parred 15, nearly hit it into the water.
Oh,
Jesus, God.
What are you doing? Just hit it in further.
That was insane. Like, that's defined marriage.
Oh, he got a fright.
Oh, my.
Never mind us.
Dicing with death, definitely. So Rory's in green, right? The greenest of green.
Yeah, the greenest of greens ever, I think.
Dark green. He was wearing his green whoop for the Masters as well.
Yeah. The Masters is in green.
We should talk about Shane as well, I suppose. Had an unbelievable weekend up until...
Do we have to? It feels like a...
What can he take from it, I suppose, is the question that you asked for Shane Lowry.
It's so similar to last year as well.
It's similar to last year, except I thought he went 70, 69, 68 on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And his iron play was the best of the field. I think him and Sam Burns, ironically played together yesterday, were sort of tied. But he just seemed like he just had it on a string. He was playing brilliant. Shane's always going to have... He's always going to have layups on the par fives and things like that. He's not the longest hitter, but he seemed to have everything in rhythm and he just wasn't holding putts. And to be honest, that's an ongoing thing with him, but there are also days where they can all start going in and you're like, he's not out of contention here if he can do this.
Yeah.
And he just collapsed, completely and utterly collapsed. And I just wonder what you do with that if you're him.
Yeah.
You saw the embrace with Rory at the end. It was nice and fair play to him. He's still the first golfer there to meet him, and he always will be. And I imagine he's a very, very good friend. But I think even Rory didn't have the exuberance this time.
Rory had
sympathy immediately. Oh, yeah. He couldn't do the sort of thank you. He was like, "What the hell happened out there?" Like, you know. So
it like we saw a bit of that last year. Like even before it was over, you remember the interview at the end of the third round in which they ask about Rory, and he's like, "I'm still in this."
Yeah.
So he obviously, you know, first and foremost has lost the tournament, but you have to commend him for being able to put that aside for 10, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
But just heartbroken for him. Like, I really thought he was in the running. When Saturday came to an end, I was like, he's playing really, really good.
So
stuff.
Well.
And you're kind of thinking there's no way it happens. Like, I think he was 11 over on the last day last year. You're kind of thinking, there's no way he does it again.
It didn't even enter my head. I thought there was a chance that he could run out of steam in the last few holes or it might not go.
You
just don't get the birdies and you're suddenly four or five shots behind. I didn't see a collapse coming. It's really disappointing.
Is it the fifth he hits the lip of the bunker and it, from there it just goes downhill? It's such an unfortunate shot as well. Like 2 inches higher and it's fine.
Yeah.
And then that's his tournament.
He'd already made a bogey at that stage.
Yeah, but he wasn't out of it though. Like it was.
In fairness, he had the birdie to get it back.
And a few of them were kind of slipping up a little bit. So you're kind of like, he's still in this. Obviously, he's up against it at that point. But yeah, that's it then. It's such a shame. The hole in one, we shouldn't forget. An unbelievable shot.
Absolutely.
Like he has his highlights, obviously, from the tournament.
First player in Masters history to have two holes in one. He's also like, we're in this position where, you know, you look at Tom McKibben over the weekend and you're like, right, he doesn't make the cut. And we've had this unbelievable run since, you know, Darren Clark came on the scene, however, in the mid-90s, early 90s even, Gerard, really, you know, where we've had relevant players at the top and it's reached this pinnacle now, obviously, with Rory McIlroy winning six majors. But, you know, you're looking at the last two groups in the Masters have two Irish players in it. It was the last three groups last year, and Lowry is on this, you know, if Rory McIlroy didn't exist, my God, the hopes of the nation would be so pinned on Shane Lowry. Yeah. He's such a high-achieving, high-ranking golfer that we haven't had that many of over the years. And I think we have to prepare ourselves for the fact that when Rory and Shane go away, I think we'll realise how good Shane Lowry was, because I don't think there's anything coming that's going to match them. Like,
no. Not for a while.
No.
I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in a, we should really enjoy appreciate that we have it so good. How good Lowry is 100%. As well. Like,
So Rory's now level with Lee Trevino, Nick Faldo and Phil Mickelson on 6, in his sights on 7, Arnold Palmer, Sam Snead, Gene Saracen, Bobby Jones, Harry Vardon, who I suspect is still Europe's best golfer, at 1-7 between 1896 and 1914.
Right, okay, let's call it in the post-war era, or whatever they like.
Colour television.
The can't really judge.
Can you get to Gary Player on 9?
How many golfers were there in the field in the Vardon era?
Him and his pals.
Old Tom Morris probably the Europe's best ever golfer.
Cameron's all Ireland's. Like, there's like about 9 teams in Ireland playing.
Can you get to Gary Player on 9?
Like, it's a big ask. Like, when Tiger got to 14, nobody thought he wasn't going to get to 18.
Justin Rose playing as well as he is at this age gives me a bit of hope for Rory.
It's just, again, the prime extending towards 3 more majors, which, you know, even if he does well, could be 6 years. It's a big ask given how long he's been at the top, and it just hasn't happened before. So it's like, it's not to say that he can't overcome it. It's just numbers would suggest he won't. But
he's not 37 until next month.
Yeah.
It's funny. Russell Henley's 37th birthday yesterday. He feels like an up-and-comer, like, you know, in golf. It's a strange thing.
Like, his career has been so mentally taxing as well. It's not just the physical side of it. It's just been such a...
He seems to like that, though.
To a point.
He's a drama.
Somebody gets too much, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things we talk about, things like, you know, sports personality of the year and all that stuff, like, it's whether him being the heir to Tiger, and it's like, no matter what Scotty does, it's like Rory is television, like, isn't he? It's just everything. He is going to go down. It's funny, there was comparisons between him and Mickelson last night, and arguments over, I think, Alan Shipnuck, who's just written a book about Rory McIlroy, is like, he's head and shoulders above Phil. I think there's arguments to be had on both sides of that, I think, and who Phil was up against during his prime probably is one of the bigger questions there. But the two of them do share an aura that if McIlroy isn't there, I don't know what golf is at the moment. I don't know. You said Russell Henley. I said last night, if this is when Henley was on a tear, it's like, if it's Henley, and when Rory was in the bin, I'm like, if this is Henley, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Like, no, you know, be honest, like, Scotty Scheffler.
The least box office end to one of the most box office things I've ever seen is Russell Henley getting the green jacket from Rory. You're like, oh no. But nobody wants that.
Like, Scotty Scheffler, his quality of golf makes him watchable and makes him somewhat intriguing. But he's not box office.
He's very, very good.
I find him boring as hell.
I think the weekend, Scotty at the weekend was a bit like Terminator.
Love Scotty,
and
yeah.
He would not go away, and he wouldn't stop. He was out to like 33 to 1. Or
if he's on his own, is anybody watching?
Somebody got him at 66. No, but sorry, like, at the moment, I think what's happened now, because McIlroy has won this, and obviously Scheffler was the best golfer, totally unstoppable for such a long period of time, and has just come off that peak, I think we're entering into it like that peak Greg Norman, Nick Faldo era, where there's two people of relatively similar standard,
yeah,
and we're going to see them go head to head. Except it's even better, because we know that Scotty might actually be the better golfer. McIlroy clearly has more talent, but Scotty's got to be able to manage his way around and has no emotion. He's like almost emotion free. I know people say he shows anger now when he's losing, but whereas the opposite, it's like,
but that's a yin and yang thing. So Scotty fits into that. Yeah. I'm saying without Rory, in so many ways, I mean, what is golf at the moment? Because who's the yang?
Well,
if it's a Scotty, like, you know,
yeah, I don't know,
because he is a robot basically, like, and he's the best technical golfer and all of this, like, yeah. You know.
Cam Young seemed relatively interesting.
Yeah. There's something there, yeah.
I just think they're all the same in some ways, and whereas
I would largely agree, but I do think Scotty has managed to separate himself by just the sheer excellence.
But he's got this thing where McIlroy's probably the most talented maverick that has also now achieved what he's supposed to achieve. So it's like, you look, I don't know, I don't know, there's more better examples, but obviously the Northern Ireland thing, Alex Higgins jumps to mind. Alex Higgins, this like incredible maverick, most talented snooker player probably of all time, up there with Ronnie anyway, wins only two world championships 10 years apart. Like, massive underachievement.
Ronnie has done it,
I suppose. Yeah, he's won seven, I suppose, yeah, and that has had massive gaps in the middle of, yeah, he's probably the best comparison. But generally, these people give us all of this, but don't achieve, they give us all this drama, but probably at the end of it, leave a lot on the course.
Would you say Phil Mickelson?
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose Phil did win six majors in the end. They kind of all came fairly quickly, didn't they?
Scotty has a couple more majors in him as well.
Scotty, yeah.
Like,
this is gonna be Scotty great only needs to win the US Open to win the Grand Slam that Rory worked his whole life for, you know. So
I think there is a tier. There's a tier one, and it's the two boys, and then there's a tier two, and there is a good few in that tier two. It does feel like there is a group there that's, they're all kind of on the same level. They're all just trying to.
Well, what Scheffler and McIlroy have, and Scheffler did it to kind of a bit of a different level this week, was this ability to, when you're out of a tournament, you are just there long enough that you somehow end up in the top five. You know, it's just like by sheer talent, over the course of 72 holes, you can't keep them down that far, and they kind of just end up going up the leaderboard, even if they're not in contention. As Scheffler put himself actually into contention this week.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant performance by him.
Yeah, so you know the way Rory would have had a load of those backdoor seconds and thirds. That didn't feel like this. I felt like Scheffler was loitering with intent.
Oh, he was the one that, again, if he doesn't par 17, you're like, he's going to put himself in a playoff with Scotty effing Scheffler.
Well, and sorry, like, Scotty lipped out on 17 with his putt that trickled down the hill and nearly died. And if that had gone in.
Yeah. Now, he held a lot of 20-foot par putts as well. He did.
But like,
but that's Scotty Scheffler. That's his game.
So the PGA Championship is May 14th to the 17th. It's in Pennsylvania.
I looked them up. All East Coast majors this year.
Okay.
All good. Means we can watch them and come in here only slightly bleary-eyed.
Then it's Shinnecock for the US Open. And then it's Birkdale for the Open. That's Rory's record at Birkdale.
Do you remember the time Shane was leading the US Open and it was in California? So he was going in, he was leading in the Sunday by three shots or whatever. He collapsed, unfortunately. But that's sort of like, that is so late. That's when it ends at 3 a.m. as opposed to 12 a.m.
Can't commit to this,
Birkdale,
2017, Rory finished tied fourth, seven behind Jordan Spieth.
Jordan Spieth. Golf is a funny one, isn't it? Jordan Spieth feels like so far off the player that used to, and you're thinking over the course of 72 holes, he only took eight more shots than McIlroy.
Yeah, it's like
he's miles off it. Like, you know, he's nowhere near it. It's like, that's how good these guys are. It's like eight shots over the course of 72 holes is a massive difference.
That's the last time it's been at Birkdale. Harrington won it there in 08, and then Mark O'Meara and Ian Baker Finch. So, no one's going to.
McIlroy, not the first Irishman to retain a major championship.
No one's going to feel like they have anything over the rest of the field.
Yeah, unless Ian Baker Finch makes a comeback.
There you go. Right, so Shane he's got to be in the red because he's not feeling. He can't be.
Well, it's the weekend,
no,
though.
Patronising.
Isn't it?
He doesn't want it.
Well, I don't think it's patronising.
I think it's orange because.
I think so. It's the hole in one. He'd been playing some great stuff up until yesterday.
Like, he has to take this as, I can win another major. Whereas, you know, there were times, I think, since 2019 that it might not have felt that way. You know, he's a top 20 player. He really feels like a top 10 player at the moment.
Yeah.
But we have to do something about these Sundays.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is happening at a higher level when he's more in contention. It's happening, instead of happening on Sunday, it's happening at 16, 17, 18 on a Sunday. But, yeah.
I think
there's something missing there.
I think he's amber. I think, Dev said from
things were patronized.
Not at all. We have to take it as a weekend. You can't just take yesterday. Yesterday, yes, is a red performance, but we haven't been on air since last Friday, so.
It's okay. I like the new rules that we've just made up with. Okay, let's go with it.
We move on then.
All right. I don't know if we're ready to move on from
or do you want to...
No, okay.
We have to judge Arsenal the whole season.
I'll happily talk more. Not just the weekend.
Go away. I'll happily talk more golf if you want to stick with the golf.
And we'll come back to it. We've got John Hogan later on, so...
Poor Colm, not here. He's been banging on about flaky Arsenal all season, but he's not here just as they get flaky. And Dara here was like, oh, I don't trust Arsenal whatsoever. So it's actually, he's the official owner of the conch, the anti-Arsenal conch. Mm-hmm. And therefore, he's taking his little lap of honour here. I told you about Arsenal, didn't he?
Tried to tell you.
Colm is screaming at the radio. Or whisper shouting because he has a baby.
They call me crazy. They call me crazy. They call me bitter in the comments. A bitter Man United fan. I just thought the last few games, obviously they haven't lost a league game until the weekend gone by. I just thought they weren't playing well, particularly the Sporting game. I know people were like, it's a decent result on paper. Like, you know, you go away in any Champions League quarterfinal, you get a win. That's a good result. But it's like, they're not playing well, though. Like, they're not a football team that is functioning well. And going into this stretch now, it's a terrible time to be going down that route of not clicking. And that's pretty much what happened against Bournemouth, wasn't it? They played off the park almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they've...
At the Emirates.
Man City this Sunday. I know they've the second leg in the Champions League first, but it's an awful time playing this type of football. And I think City as well, people didn't trust them against Chelsea, fair enough, but they seem to be coming into it at the perfect time as well, which is obviously very contrasting to Arsenal, so it's absolutely worst timing for Arsenal. But I said it last week, I could see City winning this title, genuinely.
I think absolutely. My God, like I thought if you had to think, they'll scrape a win or whatever, but I was in no way surprised, was there? And then actually watching the match unfold, they get a lucky penalty. It was a penalty, but it's, you know, that's a handball at point blank range. It's a bit of luck, really. They're not creating any chances.
Exactly,
they get themselves back into the game. It's like, will they wake up? They arguably played worse after that. Bournemouth looked a better football team than them. And that's where you're getting to that point now with Arsenal, where I think this has been coming for a few weeks. You're getting to that point now where, say, we were with Liverpool. Now, I know Liverpool have a good win and a comfortable win at the weekend, so they're probably a bad example right now, but you just put yourself back pre-Saturday. You're getting to that point where you're thinking, like, where are they going to get the points? And we're going through their fixtures. Yeah. They're going, like, they could beat Fulham. They could do this. They could do that. But are you sure? And I think we're at that point with Arsenal now, and Arsenal are title chasers. And City's the exact opposite. I've been arguing all season long on many, many shows that this is not the City. Stop thinking that City are going to go on this run of 12 wins in a row just because they've done it in the past. This isn't the same team. They've shown no evidence of it. They struggle, especially away from home against top teams. This is the first... I don't think Chelsea are a top team, but let's call them a big team.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've been comfortable and confident of City winning a game going into one of those because, one, Chelsea are a basket case, but two, they actually have found something. And it's the first time that they have found it.
Yeah.
And they look a much better team at the moment. And City could win out. And their performances, if you take their last three performances, League Cup final, brilliant, right? Play Arsenal off the park. 4-0 against Liverpool in the FA Cup. And then this 3-0 at Stamford Bridge. This is a team that are on a run.
Yeah.
And I saw they showed Pep arriving to the ground like yesterday afternoon. And my God, he was just a comfortable, relaxed-looking man. You know what I mean? Big smile on his face. What does it matter? Sure, we've nothing to do. No one's going to care. It's all going to be about... The entire conversation for the rest of the season, no matter what happens, is going to be about Arsenal.
I think they feel...
It's a free hit for the best manager of all time.
Yeah, the pressure is off now as well. Like, Arsenal, they do it to themselves. Like, you see the fans leaving at the end of the game. Like, that is not the atmosphere. I know, like, people say the fans don't affect the game that much, but, like, that is not the atmosphere you want to be creating around a team that is still going for a title. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think...
I did think that the Sporting result was actually all they needed to get their season back on track, and it turned out that isn't the case. And now they have Sporting, which, if they go out against Sporting, because they're only 1-0 up, and so... You know, if they were to lose,
they play on Saturday, you wouldn't guarantee anything.
That's it. Suddenly, they're an extra time of penalties and feeling wrecked heading into the game against City. Now, maybe the fact that the City game is an away match, maybe they're actually set up better to be an away team and they're happy to sit back and defend and be the counter-attacking side.
Yeah.
Jokers was complaining about the pitch being dry.
Oh, God.
It's going to be an interesting atmosphere in training, isn't it? Afterwards, where he goes in, the ground staff of like, you know, there's just a little bit of strychnine in his boots.
Well,
dry for both teams. I'm going, what? The pitch is too dry for you? What?
My fear, see, there's, if you look at Arsenal now, right, maybe like, you know, you lose, you go out of the two competitions in the space of two games, so your quadruple possibility is halved immediately. But really, you haven't actually lost any physical ground in terms of the league, you know, like, you know, the thing that you really need to win. But then you back it up by that performance at Bournemouth, now put themselves in real trouble. Real high anxiety for a team that I think is already suffering from anxiety, and a manager that I think, again, I don't mean in the medical term, but I think there's an anxious feeling around what Arsenal are doing. And I was talking about it on Friday that I feel like they've been. I think Arteta is shrinking everything. The more tense it gets, the more it's like, let's just do one thing and one thing only.
And
when they were trying to do other things on Saturday, towards the end of the game when they brought on Eze and all, they look totally ill-equipped to do it. It's like as if they have no practice to play football like a normal team and try and create actual chances when you can't just have Declan Rice hitting it into 74 people on the goal line from corners. You know, so I just be concerned. We're talking about Rory have this ability to crash and then let there be a bit of a freedom to it then, you know, like let's come back and have freedom. Arsenal don't seem to have that in their locker at the moment. It seems to be they're definitely a worse team now than they were 3 or 4 months ago. Like and I don't mean form. I think they're a worse team.
Yeah. Like the style of play, you have to win with that style of play because there's no room for players to take over and start playing ball. Like Man City have players like that, like Cherki or Semenyo, who can just kind of take over a game if they need to. Whereas Arsenal, their system doesn't really allow that. Like if things aren't going right, then there's no real freedom to go and win a game.
Mendy and Rice are excellent players, you know.
That system doesn't really allow you to go and win a game for your team. It depends. It really relies on everything going well for you.
I don't know. I think that's
the evidence.
I think that if things were going well for them, the counterpoint to that is that this is a team that hasn't won the league yet, and so shrinking everything makes it easier for them to concentrate on that one thing, do that really well, and on the balance of probabilities, that's going to be enough to win games at home against Bournemouth, and it should have been. But obviously, form has deserted them. The nerves have really kicked in, and suddenly we're looking forward to an absolutely massive game.
And the tension then. So it's like, you know, don't be a home fan in North London at the moment because home games are a disadvantage.
Live and off the ball on Sunday. Romero crying afterwards, Van de Ven on goal. It was a harsh one. Like, it's De Zerbi saying they're terrified of getting relegated. It's you're supposed to stop that. Very exciting. We got to go because we have Gaelic football standing by. Is there anything else you want to just...
Well, we won't bother with graphics now, but Spurs are obviously in the red as well as Arsenal. And Irish rugby mentioned as well. 33-12, that one finished in Twickenham. 77,000 plus.
Yeah, that's unreal, isn't it?
Insane. Obviously a disappointing result. We talk about moral victories. No one likes them, but edging closer to this England team, you would say, who are an all-time great force in women's rugby. So it's tough to read. It's the first game of the Six Nations. More big games to come. So you wouldn't write them off yet in terms of coming second or third in this Six Nations. But yeah, they'll be disappointed, but it's not a bad result.
We'll go back to the golf with John Hogan in about half an hour's time. In the meantime, Conor Myler, former Tyrone footballer, is standing by. He's going to join us in studio to talk about Tyrone and Armagh next. But that is this week's version of the Performance Rankings.
Off the Ball's Performance Rankings.
Off the Ball Breakfast. With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.